Okay, Parashat Chukat, starting at the very beginning with the enigmatic mitzvah of the Parah Aduma. We have here the first few lines. Vaydaber Adonai Moshe vel Aharon le'mor. So Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aharon, saying, Zot Chukat HaTorah she'tiva Adonai le'mor. This is the statute of the Torah which Hashem has commanded, saying, Daber Abel Israel, speak to me, Israel, Viku Eilecha. They shall take for you farah aduma tamima, a completely red cow, asher in barmum, which has no blemishes, asher lo ala aleha ol, and no yoke has gone on it. Let's start off with the question of the Or HaChaim. It's a question which asked by a number of the Mefarshim. Zot chukat HaTorah, tzarech ladat, we need to understand. Lama kina la mitzvah zu shem klalut haTorah. Why is this mitzvah called a mitzvah to do with the whole Torah? Shahayalo lomar, because it should have said zot chukah. This is a statute, or zot chukat haTuma. This is the statute of the impurities, or chukat haTahara, or the statute of purification. Kiderech Omro, as we have in Parshat Bo, Zot Chukat HaPesach. Right, so it's not Chukat HaTorah, it's the Chok, the statute of the Korban Pesach. Here, this isn't a Chok of the whole Torah, this is the Chok of the Parah Aduma. Why did it call it Chukat HaTorah? Ve'en lo mashin kaven lahatzriach taharat efer parah la'asok b'Torah. It certainly can't mean that if you want to learn Torah, you have to purify yourself first by using the ashes of the red heifer. Ki lo chein matzi, no, Razal. That's not what the Chachamim say at all. Sha'amru, they said, Sha'ad Rabba, on the contrary. Ein divrei Torah mekablin tuma. We've got a principle that the words of the Torah don't contract tuma. So even if you're a tamei mate, even if you've been hugging a corpse, as it were, you can then come into the Beis HaMedrash and learn and touch the Sefer Torah. Well, l'chol svarot razal, afilu machmirim bevale kiryan, and even according to those opinions in Masechet Brachot, which say that a baal keri, a person who's had a seminal emission, is not allowed to learn Torah. That's not because he's tamei, but mitam shit sarich ba'im av yira. It's because when you learn Torah, you have to have a sense of awe about what you're doing. And tumat keri is associated with a certain degree of frivolity. And therefore, you need to immerse in a mikveh before you learn Torah. But it's not because you've got some tumah which prevents you from learning Torah. It's just you've got a certain state of mind. Modim b'timei meit shemutarim b'isek Torah, and everybody agrees that if you're ritually impure from contact with a corpse, you can learn Torah. So why is it zot chukat haTorah? It's nothing to do with a statute to do with learning Torah. V'yitba'er ha'inyan al-pi ma sha'amru b'ferek b'batra d'nazir. So he says we can explain it on the basis of the Gemara at the end in the last chapter of Masechet Nazir. Upsakor Rambam Beferik Aleph Mehilchot Tumat Tumait, and this is also a psak of the Rambam in the first perek of Hilchot Tumat Tumait. Shein Hakuti Nase Tamei Meit, that a kuti or a non-Jew doesn't contract ritual impurity when he comes into contact with a corpse. V'zel shonon, this is what the Rambam says, she'im nagaba meit on the sana and the sa'o, if a kuti, a Gentile, touches a corpse, or carries a corpse, or ha'ehil alav, or cover, or stretched over a corpse, harehu kumo shelo naga, then his degree of tumah is as if he hasn't come into contact at all. Halamazet omer, what's it comparable to? It's just like an animal that touches a corpse. If an animal touches a corpse, it doesn't contract ritual impurity. Likewise, if a kuti does, adkan, that's the Rambam. Now we see that at least in the context of Tumah and Tara, Am Yisrael is on a superior level to the other nations of the world. The other nations of the world don't contract ritual impurity. We as Jews can contract ritual impurity. Hu be'emtza'ut kabalat ha-Torah. Why is it that we can contract ritual impurity? It's because we've received the Torah. Shezulat zehineke chol ha-goyim beit Yisrael. Were it not for the Torah, we would just people would be like any other nation. Umeata ta'amnu tzuf tavash imreikel. And now, as a result of the Torah, we've tasted, very beautiful language here, tzuf tavash, a honeycomb, imreikel, the words of Hashem, b'masha amar, when he said, zot chukat ha-Torah, this is the statute which we could translate, this is the statute as a result of receiving the Torah. Peirush chukazu shel hatuma utna'e tarata. These strange laws about ritual impurity and the way and the circumstances under which you purify yourself, to sovev meha Torah, they're all as a result of receiving the Torah. Ki al yedei shekiblu ha-Torah, nasu am bnei Yisrael, davash ha-ruchanim ha-shfeilim, tsa'evim lehidayek bahem. As a result of receiving the Torah, the Jewish people become a nation, or a group of individuals, however you want to understand it, people that the lower spiritual elements want to cling to. Liyotam chativa shel kedusha elyona b'chayehem gam b'motam. Because they've got such a sanctity, they've got a pull on these forces of tumah. B'chayehem b'noger she b'noger b'meit o yahilu alav. When a Jew is alive and they come into contact with a corpse or lean over it, they become tame. B'chama domet idbak b'hem ha-tumah. The tumor cleaves to them. Shevamate. Venotach botzli pare. The tumor of the dead person cleaves to them and doesn't want to separate. Imlo b'chach gadol, unless it's through some great power. Shechakach Hashem b'mitzvah hamurah b'inyan shel para. As Hashem has detailed and set out for us in the mitzvah of the para aduma. So the Or HaChaim here is saying a number of, I think, particularly interesting things. One particularly interesting thing is he's telling us why it's Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is a Chukah which is as a result of Bnei Israel having the Torah, that we become ritually impure and we have to ritually purify ourselves. The other point of particular interest here is that he's saying that there's nothing intrinsically superior about a Jew in terms of Tum and Tara. There's nothing genetic about it, something spiritual, that we could, because we've received the Torah and we are saturated by the Torah, so that makes us attractive to Tumah and sort of, expanding his example a little bit. I suppose, he said that, that the Torah is, this honeycomb. So if you think about honey, if a person were to coat themselves with honey, they would attract all the flies, and all the wasps and bees and things. And that's exactly what the Torah does to us. That's the Torah, is like honey, and that attracts negative elements. That's the tumah is attracted to us because of that Torah. And we have to go through the procedure of the para aduma to wash away that tumah. So it's only as a result of the Torah that we have this tumah and tara, and that's why it says zot chukat ha-Torah rather than zot ha-chukah or zot chukat ha-tumah or anything like that. Now there is, of course, the very big question, which is, what's the significance of the Para Aduma? And the Para Aduma, as we probably well know, is the most enigmatic of all mitzvot. This is the mitzvah that Shlomo HaMelech said, I've gone through everything else, I've worked out the reasons for all the other mitzvot in the Torah, but I'm stumped by the Para Aduma, principally because it's Metaheret HaTameh, Metameh HaTahor. That's the paradox, that it makes Tame people Tahor, and it makes the Tahor person, though sprinkling the ashes, it's making him Tame. So really the symbolism, even if we, accept that we can darshan Tame HaMitzvot, we get stuck when it comes to the Para Aduma. Nevertheless, There is some discussion about it amongst the commentators, and I want to bring to your attention what Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, the Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, one of the Rishonim, says on this this mitzvah, because he makes, again, a number of important points, I think, for us to consider. V'ichu'eylecha paraduma. So you should have this paraduma. Lefishe lo yehu b'nei adam metsuyin etzel metehem mitochi bataam. What's the reason for this mitzvah? It's so that people don't find themselves so associated, so close to their dead relatives because they love them so much. V'yitzaru yoter midai. And as a result, they would be, they would get overly distressed by death. That, so the first answer that he's giving is saying that once you create a situation of tumah from a corpse, that's going to mean that people are going to often think twice about coming into contact with a corpse. Now, of course, nowadays, unless you're a resident Kohen, then the existence of tumah and tara isn't of any relevance. That's a person can be tamei. We're all tamei meitim. Person can be on the chevra kadisha. You can be a grave digger. You can go to a cemetery. No, the fact that you become tamei meit doesn't matter. That, but in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, in the times of Kodshim, that and such things, then of course it was relevant whether a person was tamei. And there was, you know, certain inconveniences that, you know, even, you know, maybe you went round to, if you're tamei, you go round to a friend and they say, oh, no, don't come into this room. We want everything in this room to stay tahor. We don't want you coming into contact with our, you know, we like to live a tara dikah life. Not just a Torah dikah life, but a Tara dikah life. That's, you know, don't come into contact with such things. Not able to go to the Beit HaMikdash, etc. You had to go through this purification ritual. So therefore, the reason for this ritual, or the reason for this tumah, that's primarily, is to discourage people, I would say, from being obsessed with death. That's a concern that the Torah has. That's, you know, you sometimes do have people who are, you know, obsessed with death. You know, so for all sorts of reasons, but it's generally not terribly healthy. You know, you have people who, you know, sometimes it happens, you know, with elderly people who are widows or widowers, you know, they spend, I think, an unhealthy amount of time at the cemetery. That's listen, I suppose if a person's been married for, you know, for 65 happy years, you know, then, you know, maybe it's not so unhealthy, but in certain cases, at least, you know, it can be an unhealthy preoccupation with, you know, with death. And therefore, the Torah is trying to distance us from it by telling us that, listen, if you become associated with death, that's going to impact on other aspects of your life. Now, of course, a person, you know, is supposed to become tamei. That's when a close relative dies. That's one of their mitzvah. Mitzvah that Kohen doesn't become tamei. That's except for immediate relatives. That's so, you know, even Kohen becomes tamei for immediate relatives. But beyond the immediate relatives, we want to create a situation where, you know, it's not every day of the week that you become tamei. Even with the immediate relatives, yeah, okay, bury them, become tamei, but don't keep going back to the cemetery every single week. And a way of ensuring that people don't, or safeguarding against it, is to have this din of tumah. So that's the first explanation that the Bechor Shor gives. Inami, another possibility. Shelo yehu dorshim el hameitim uvale ov. So that people don't get involved in necromancy. So that people don't get involved in consulting the dead. That's why the Torah was so strict with this type of tumah, more than any other type of tumah. La soto avi avot ha-tumah, to turn it into being the supreme type of tumah. Shematame adam v'chelim v'af metame bo'ohel. It makes people tamei, it makes kelim tamei, makes a person who goes into a room tamei. V'oseh cheref k'chalal, that's, and if a sword, piece of metal, comes into contact with the tumma, then that metal has got the same status as the corpse corpse itself. So again, keeping people away from death. So those are the first two observations that he makes. And then he makes a third particularly interesting observation. It's also got a dimension of human dignity associated with it. That's why you become tame. So that you shouldn't use human hides, human skins. We're in Rav Yosef B'Chosho. That you shouldn't use human hides to make water bottles, to make carpets out of. You shouldn't use the bones to make bone utensils. As you do with animals. This would be a form of disgrace to humankind. This is a Gemara in Chulin. As I said, why is human flesh, human skin, tamei? The person doesn't turn his parents into being carpets. That's, and why is a human bones tame? That you don't turn your parents' bones into cutlery. That's people come around and say, oh, this is a nice set of hors d'oeuvre cutlery you've got. Yes, that's it was my father's arm. Right, exactly. That's so, you know, again, for a practical purpose, if human remains are tame, then people aren't going to want to have them around all the time. It's interesting that he says this, because it's an interesting question. You know, where do we get the notion of kvod hamet from, and the issur of nivul hamet, prohibition against disgracing the mate. So, of course, we've got the mitzvah in Sefer Tevarim of ki kavotik berenu and lo talin livlato alav, that you shouldn't leave a body hanging, but you should surely bury it. So, the chora, if there's a mitzvah to bury a body, then obviously you can't keep bits of it around all the time and turn it into cutlery. So maybe Rav Yosef B'Chosho simply sees those two mitzvot linked together, that mitzvah linked together with the mitzvah of the tumat mate in this week's sedra. Moving on in the symbolism of what's going on here, we're told that how are the ashes of the para aduma administered? We often think of the para aduma, when we're kids, we're told, the ashes of the para aduma are sprinkled. So, I think when I was a kid, I had in my mind the para aduma was burnt, and then you've got all the ashes, and the Kohen takes a handful of ashes and sprinkles them over the person. It's not like that. They're mixed with the Mayim Chayim, and then they're sprinkled with the Kohen takes, Lakacha Kohen, Eitz Erez Ve'ezov, Ushni Tolat. So the Kohen takes Eitz Erez, cedar wood, that's Ve'ezov, and hyssop branches, Ushni Tolat, and purple thread, Vishlichel Toch Srefat Apara, and throws that in as well to the mixture. Now Rashi says, Shloshet Minin, these three species, Keneged Shloshet Alafim Shenaflu Ba'egel, they're corresponding to the 3,000 Israelites who perished as a result of the Chet HaEgel. Right, three thousands and three materials here. The erez hu agavo al kol ha'ilanot, the cedar tree is the highest of all trees. The ezov namuch michulan, and the hyssop bush is the lowest of them all. Siman shagavo ashinit ga'eh, that's v'chata. It's symbolic to tell us that an arrogant person, a haughty person, who became haughty and sinned, Yashpilatz Mokezov, should humble himself, lower himself like a hyssop, Ucha Tolat, and like a worm, Vit Kaperlo, and he will be atoned for. So there's a slight play on words here, because Shni Tolat, that we usually translate as being, you know, being the purple or crimson crimson wool. But Tolat is also a worm. So you've got a play on words here, that so it's Yashpilat's more, the high tree, will make itself low, like a hyssop bush, and like a worm. Of course, the question is, why do you need, you know, the hyssop bush and the worm? Just make it, make yourself low like a hyssop bush, or just make yourself low like a worm. So Rav Zalman Sorotskin in Oznaim La Torah develops the theme a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, in the Pesukim. Yeah, that's much more, right? Don't think so. Don't think so. You're checking the Pesukim? I don't think so. That's we can check. But I think the part, certainly there's a passage that says it's 3,000. That's eight eres ve'isolvi shni tolat. Let's look at Reb Zalman Sorotskin. See the words hyssop and crimson thread. The cedar from which the wood is taken is the largest of plants, while the hyssop is the smallest. And rabbinic tradition tells us that the crimson thread should be wrapped around the cedar and the hyssop, binding them together. Nothing new yet. The word for crimson is tolat, which also means worm. So we saw that in Rashi. Thus, the crimson symbolizes rot and decay. Right? Because the word, the tolat, that's the worm. That's the common fate that ties together great and small. As it is said, the small and great are there in the grave. But even the worm, which represents death, which seems to have the final say with everyone, need not feel proud, for it too will one day be abolished forever. He shall throw them into the burning of the cow. So we've got the mighty and the low, the Erez and the Azov, and they're combined together. What's the unifying factor? The unifying factor is the Tolat. Tolat represents death. A worm is a symbol of decay. So therefore, that's it saying, it doesn't matter how haughty you are or how modest somebody else is, at the end of time, you're all going, at the end of your lives, you're going to be exactly the same. You've got that unifying factor. But ultimately, that's also going to be lost. Now, Rashi makes this reference to the Shloshet Alafim Shenaflu Ba'egel, the 3,000 Israelites that died as a result of the Cheta Egel. And if you look at Rashi at the end of the perek of the Para Aduma, he goes through the whole perek, verse by verse, and gives the explanations of what each phrase means, but doesn't talk at all about the symbolism. But then at the very end of the perek, that after he's explained it all to Seder, he then tells us in Midrash Agada Hetakti Misodosha Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. I've copied out a Midrash Agada from Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. And he goes through a whole description, or goes through all the Pesukim, and with each phrase, he links it to the Cheta Egel. It's clear that, at least according to Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan's tradition, that the Para Aduma was coming to atone for the Cheta Egel. That's why it was a Para Aduma. The Para, cow, the Egel was a calf. Aduma is a goldish color that's which you know, goes, so the red cow atones for the gold of the Egel. That's it needs to be totally red and unblemished. Al Shem Yisrael Shayu Tumimim, because the Jewish people before the Cheta Egel were unblemished, but they became Balei Mumin, they became blemished, so this has to atone for them, etc., etc. Why was it Elazar HaKohen, the Sagan, the deputy who did this ritual? Because it wasn't appropriate that Aaron should do it, because Aaron had sinned with the Egel HaZahav, etc., etc. So it's easy to see the parallels between the para aduma on the one hand, and the egel hazahav on the other. What's much harder to see is the reason for these parallels. In terms of, yeah, it's really interesting, there's these parallels, but at the end of the day, the para aduma is a ritual to do with purification from death. So why should it be that the ritual of purification from death should be linked in with the as a mode of atonement for the Chet HaEgel? That's a question that I was sort of wondering about, you know, for quite a while. I haven't come across any totally convincing answers, but I did come across something of Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein in his Sefer Tosefet Bracha. That's we've often seen from the Torah Tamima, and he also wrote a parallel sefer, the Tosefet Bracha, where he asks this this question. That, and we're looking on the left-hand column, page 135 in the Tosefet Bracha. So in the first is v'yichu elecha para aduma, about halfway down the column. And he brings the Rashi that links everything in with the Egel HaZahav. He says it's not clear why that should be. Ve'ef shalomar, but possibly we could say, mishum de be'inyan mitzvat para aduma nimtza'a tchuna achat hafucha mishpat hegyoni hamakubal. So it might be because, as we know, in the midst of para aduma, there's something which seems very strange and the wrong way round, as it were. Kihi mitaharet tumeim umutama tahorim. It purifies the impure and defiles the pure. Kamosh kadav Rashi b'fasuk kaf aleph, as Rashi himself says, ki atamei shemazim alav nitar mitumato. The tamei person who has the ashes sprinkled on him becomes tahor. And the person who sprinkled the ashes becomes Tamei. Chayin amru Chazal, and then Chazal said, Ki Shlomo HaMelech Tamal Zeh, Va'amar Mati HaChakna, V'iruchokam Mimeni. Shlomo HaMelech thought this was bizarre, couldn't understand it. Klomash Sha'amash Yishtatel Itchakim L'dat Metzad Sod Mitzvah Zu. He tried to become so wise that he'd even be able to understand this mitzvah. Aval Lo Yachol LaHasigo, he wasn't able to. V'chokma Zuruchokam Mimeni, this piece of wisdom is eluded Shlomo HaMelech. So what's going on? He points out there's a Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah which says something amazing about the Chet HaEgel. And based on this Gemara that we're about to see, maybe we can link up the para aduma on one hand, with the Chet HaEgel on the other hand. The gambi yachas hachok masha efer para mitaharet tmeim umitama tohorim, and also with relationship to the fact that the red heifer makes tame people tahor and tahor people tame. V'ubim sechet avodah zarah. So what's this? What's this Gemara? It's a Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah. Bazeh halashon, which reads as follows. Lo hayu Yisrael ru'uyim lo'oto maaseh. We wouldn't have expected the Jewish people to have committed this sin of the Chet HaEgel. Ela sha'asu kein, but they sinned deliberately. Kedei latet pitchon peh lebalei tshuva, in order to give an opportunity to penitence. What does that mean? So that a person who sins shouldn't give up on the possibility of atonement. Because they'll be able to think and realize, ah, yes, the Jewish people, they made the Egel, but after the Egel, after they'd repented, they were forgiven. So if what the Jewish people wanted to do, this Gemara is suggesting, is that at the time of the Egel, they wanted to demonstrate that, you know, you can be wicked, and nevertheless, you can still come back to Hashem. And that's an opportunity for people who've sinned. So we don't want to get into tonight that Gemara and what on earth it means, and how could it be that they sinned deliberately with an intention of doing teshuva, that so that future generations would realize that you can do teshuva. But let's take it as a given for now. V'yotze means there, so therefore this can mean she'inya masa ha'egel who domel inya mitzvah paraduma. Now we see a conceptual link between the cheta egel on the one hand and the paraduma on the other hand. Just like the para aduma makes tall people tame and vice versa. Kacha egel. Same was true with the egel. Tame tohorim. It made the Jewish people who were at that point in time pure. It made them impure. It sullied them with sin. Shechtiyet Yisrael b'shatam. But the whole reason for this is, why did they become Tamei? In order to, in the future, purify the Tameim. The sinners of future generations. According to this, there is a parallel. In terms of the key feature of the mitzvah Paraduma is the paradox that it makes Tahor people Tamei, and it makes Tamei people Tahor. And the same is true with the Egel HaZahav. On the one hand, it took Tahor people, the Jewish people, and made them Tamei. But at the same time, it opened a window of opportunity for people who are Tamei to become Tahor. It taught them the possibility of Tshuva. And therefore, we see there's not just a symbolic or visual link, if you like, between the Paraduma and the Egel HaZahav, but also a conceptual link between the two. Let's move on from the Paraduma and spend a little bit of time thinking about the key episode in this week's Parsha, and that is the Chet of Meimariva. By Davar Adonai Boshelimo, Hashem spoke to Moshe thusly, Kach et hamateh, take the stick, v'hakel et ha'ida, and gather the congregation. Ata v'aron achicha, you and Aaron your brother, v'dibartem el ha'sela le'inehem, you should speak to the rock or the stone before their eyes, and ata me'mav, and it will produce water. V'otzeita lehem imayim min ha'sela, and you will extract for them water from the stone. And you will water the congregation and their livestock. So as we know, the people had come complaining, and Moshe and Aaron, Moshe hit the rock, and Moshe and Aaron got punished. One of the key questions is going to be, why did they both get punished? But we'll deal with that in due course. Of course, the big question is, the major question is, what did they do wrong? What was the sin? And even if we're able to identify a sin, why is that sin so enormous that it meant that Moshe and Aaron were denied entry to Eretz Yisrael? I've got first the Netziv and then the Ketav Kabbalah, but I'd like to look at it the other way around, actually, and start with Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg in Haktav VaHaKabbalah. V'dibartem le'inehem. So they were told to speak to the rock in sight of all the people. Ein lefareish le'inehem alei v'haraot. Don't think that where it says le'inehem in their eyesight, it means in their eyesight. In their eyesight doesn't mean in their eyesight. What does he mean that in their eyesight doesn't mean in their eyesight? Because if we're talking about speech, then speech is something that people have to hear, not see. So if the emphasis was on the speech, okay, it would be that Bo'oznehem. Lachem b'chol makom yichubar ozen el hadibur. The term ozen is always used in connection with speech. Kamor, as he always does, gives examples. Vaydavarele from Bozneyam Haaretz, Asharachi Dover Boznechem, Vayara Udo Makan, Loznehem. So speech is always, you speak into a person's ear. You don't speak into their eye, you speak into their ear. So Mahu Lainehem, Why here does it say le'enehem? V'dibartem el hasela le'enehem. You shall speak to the rock in their eyesight. V'yitachein, it could well be shahorato kan einei hahit bonanut. When it says le'enehem, it doesn't mean in their eyesight, but it means so that they'll be able to think about this, so they'll be able to concentrate on it, focus on it. The Targumoy gives a Yiddish or German translation there. Kmo pkachna erecha ure, open your eyes and see. Vati pakachna eneshnehem, and the phrase that the eyes of both of them were opened. Sheinyanam hasagat yediyav hitbonanut. It always means that they realize something. You know, I suppose in modern English, colloquial English, say it's a light bulb moment. That's when you see the light. Okay, it doesn't mean to see you actually see any light, but it means you it clicks, a ping goes off, a light bulb comes on. All these special effects means you realise what's going on. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually says to them, you know, I'm not going to let you go into Eretz Yisrael because you failed to sanctify me in the eyes of Bnei Yisrael. She'ilu dibartem el hasela, had you spoken to the rock, v'otzi meimav, and it had produced its water, hayiti mekudash le'inei ha'ida, it would have been sanctified in the eyes of the people. V'omrim, they would have said, ma'asela zeh sha'anino medaber ve'ino shomeya, this rock which is inanimate and can't hear and can't see and can't speak, mekayim diburosh el makom, it's able to fulfill what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of it, kal v'chomer, anu, all the more so us. So therefore, what did Hashem want from this episode of the of Moshe and Aaron speaking to the rock? Lo'orer bam da'atu tfuna, to help the people understand. Al yokev chashivut dibur ha'eloki b'tzivuyav aleihem v'zehu, the importance of what God says to the people, that's what it means, le'enehem, that they should realize what's going on, to communicate this message in a way, not just they'll visually see it, but their brains will see it as well. V'amar Haranu, this is one of the slightly earlier contemporaries of the Kitav Kabbalah that he often quotes, that da ki divrei, I think it's Harav Nach Vida. That's Daki Divrei Atoranim Shalim Lemayim. Now this is very important. What's the symbolism of everything here? He's saying Divrei Torah are compared to water. The Gemara in Tarnit and other places makes that comparison. Shneimar Hoikot Samei Luchu Lemayim. That's every thirsty person should go to get water. V'leiv Hadam Nimshal Le'Even. And the human heart is compared to a stone. It's difficult to engrave the words of Torah on a person's heart. A human heart is resistant to instructions. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this amazing thing in the Midbar. He produced water from the rock, min hasela, and from the stone, the rock in Parashat B'Shalach, the stone here. Now, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, if there's no water for the people, what's the most obvious way of producing water? Well, daven, and then there should be rain, right? That would be a natural way, or, you know, Hashem is supernatural, but, you know, that's, okay, if there's no water, let's have rain. That's the easiest way of doing it. So, like, why is it that on these occasions when there's no water, instead of doing it the obvious way, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make enormous miracles for no purpose. If it can be done in a more simple way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu prefers to do that. So why have this big miracle when it could have been done in a more simple way? Why did he have to be creative and imaginative and produce water from the rock when he could have made it rain? He did this because there was a subliminal message as well. Lamed Yisrael Dat. He wanted to teach Jewish people a message. They should know that even though a person's heart is resistant, who negative all la Torah va mitzvah, and it's against its nature to conform to the rules of the Torah and the mitzvot. Mikol makom efshar davar. In truth, it's possible. Ki yilaveh al adam eizeh min hashamayim. A person will be granted assistance from heaven. Just as this hard rock can produce water, which is uncharacteristic. Likewise, a person's heart can be gushing with fulfillment of mitzvot and love of Hashem. Truth is, at the beginning of our religious development, it's of course difficult to direct ourselves towards the mitzvot. Tzarech musa gadol. Person needs lots of guidance. The chain remes b'meitzor, that tzivana moshe b'rfidim, sheyakel atzor b'mateu. That's why the first episode with the rock and water, Moshe was told, strike it. Sometimes you've got to be strict. Bang it into shape. When they first came out of Mitzrayim, the Jewish people had stone hearts. They had to be chiseled into shape. But at the end of 40 years, when they got the well, they were told, you shall speak to the rock. They weren't told to hit it. Lahorot, that teaches us, that generation, their heart was softened. It wasn't a rock heart. It was a human heart. It was more natural for them to conform to the rules of the Torah and the mitzvot. That generation, we're told, you cleave to Hashem today. That's the nature of that generation. This was an intelligent, understanding, wise nation that inherited the land of Israel. It's only at the end of the 40 years that the Jewish people really understood everything. That's the previous generation didn't really have a understanding heart. Moshe Rabbeinu never found nevonim, wise people, to be amongst his leaders. It's only when people have got hearts which can conform to Torah that they can become wise. Now in Kadesh, here in this week's parasha, where the Jewish people were complaining, more than arguing, being awkward, Moshe Rabbeinu thought they've got a stone heart. That's why he said to them, listen, you rebels. And it's because of what he thought that he made this mistake of hitting the rock. As he did in Refidim. It's enough to speak to the rock. So what's Rabbi Yaakov C. Mecklenburg telling us here? He's telling us a number of interesting things. Number one, he's telling us the reason why it was water from a rock is because there's a symbolic message. Water from a rock. Water represents Torah. Even a heart as hard as rock, it can produce the water of Torah. Now, the truth is that the heart is not always as hard as rock. In the early days of the Jewish people's existence and emergence from Mitzrayim, they had hard hearts. The only way you can deal with a rock-hard heart is by banging it. However, 40 years on, they had soft hearts. And therefore, you could influence that by speaking to it. Moshe Rabbeinu, however, didn't realize there'd been that change. And because he didn't realize there'd been that change, he smote the rock the second time, just as he smote it the first time. Rabbi Sacks, in one of his Covenant and Conversations from maybe 10, 12 years ago, he's probably reprinted it as well, and it's in, he develops this theme a little bit further. I don't think he refers to Haktava Kabbalah. Maybe he'd seen it, maybe he hasn't. That it's also interesting that Rabbi Sachs is Yaakov Tzvi and Haktava Kabbalah is Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi as well. They're both Rabbi Yaakov Tzvis. That's, but in any event, he says that this is the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. He said it wasn't a punishment. It wasn't a punishment at all. But it was a realization. Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 years on, couldn't see that the people had changed. It was a different nation. 40 years ago, they needed to be hit. Moshe Rabbeinu was still using the methods, the outdated methods from 40 years ago. 40 years ago, that was appropriate. Today, it wasn't appropriate. This was a different people. Not just physically, but, you know, in terms of who they were, what they were, the type of people they were. They didn't need to be hit, they needed to be spoken to. And if Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to make that change, then he's not being punished. It's just, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, you were the right man for that time, but we need a new man for this time. And it's like many roles of, you know, leadership. And very often you get sort of, you know, say in shuls, you know, a rabbi's there for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. That's, and everybody loves him and everybody thinks he's wonderful. But, you know, the, sometimes, you know, the methods that he was using, you know, 40 years ago when he started, he hasn't updated himself. Some rabbis are able to update, but others aren't. And the one who hasn't, it's not that he's a bad rabbi, but he just doesn't speak the language of this generation. And at some point, he needs to be replaced. You have it the same with, really, in many walks of life. That you have it, you know, in schools with head teachers. You know, oh, it's so wonderful. This being the head teacher for 40 years, he's seen, you know, generations of, you know, students come through. He's, you know, teaching grandchildren of people he taught when he first came to the school. Yeah, you know what? And he's, you know, still teaching in exactly the same way. And it's wonderful that he's able to turn to them and say, oh, your grandfather made the same mistake in maths and so did your father. But you need a new way of teaching the new generation. Or in business, sometimes you have it that, you know, a company, that, you know, a person served with great distinction, but they haven't been able to keep up with the changing times. And therefore, they're not being punished, but they're just not the right people for the current era. And that's what Haktava HaKabbalah is starting to say and what Rabbi Sachs develops it to.
Well, one thing is, the example of Rabbi Sachs is on Churchill, where Churchill actually wasn't re-elected after winning the war.
Right.
Because he was the right person for the war.
Yeah.
He wasn't the right person to take back
right.
forward from that
right.
and that's why he lost so spectacularly.
Right. I'm recalling, I didn't reread it this year, but yeah, that's
the other one, which is from, when they were talking about the Kelim about three parashiyot ago, similar sort of message around the Chatzotzot. Where every single generation had to,
yes.
make, every leader had to make his own chatzot.
Yes, I think that's one of the things I said in the shir. Yeah. I said that. I think from the Menachem Tzion. Yes, that's right. That's right. Similar idea. That's right. Yes. Exactly. That's leaders either need to, you know, keep up to date or move on in a certain sense. Let us. We'll leave the Netziv maybe for another time, Be'ezrat Hashem. And let's address the question of why was Aaron punished as well. It was Moshe who hit the rock. Aaron didn't hit the rock. Why should Aaron be punished in this way? Let's look at Rav Moshe Sternbach in Talmud Da'at. He tells us, Hinei be'emet Aaron lo chata klal b'chit shel mei meriva. Aaron didn't sin. It was Moshe who struck the rock. That's Vafa Bichein Nenash Aaron Kamoto. But nonetheless, Aaron was also, yeah, it's there. Yeah. That's Aaron was punished alongside him. Lefishe Nitpal of Re'aveira, because he was associated with a sinner. V'ne'enash yachadimo, and he was punished together with him. Umavoa bazema itita b'midrash al pasuk, And from this we can understand what the Medrash means with regard to the Pasuk a little bit later, Vayirukolai, after Aaron died, Vayirukolai dat gava Aaron, that all the people saw that Aaron had expired. They were frightened that now they would get punished for the Chet HaMeraglim. And they saw how strict things are, that Aaron was punished for the sin that Moshe did. Just because he was there and he didn't protest, he didn't say or speak up. So they were frightened. They were also with the Meraglim. They were associated with their sin. So that was something very much for them to worry about. So what Rav Sternbach is saying is that Aaron was punished because he was together with Moshe and didn't try to stop Moshe hitting the rock, didn't object, didn't do anything about it. That he didn't do it himself, but he stood by and let it happen. And he got severely punished for it. And that's, of course, a very significant message for us, you know, that, often we don't do the thing, but if we're linked by association, then that can also be a problem for us.
Do we see any parallel for that in
Halacha? Well, I mean, it's...
Just to prosecute somebody, you never prosecute somebody because he stood by and didn't...
Well, there's a...
look after the aid him.
No, there's certainly, you know, the Mishnah tells us that, you know... does speak very much about nitpa lo se'aveira, the people associated with those who do aveirot, and that they are guilty by association. Doesn't necessarily mean they, you know, we always get punished. Certainly not by a, you know, by an earthly court. But it's, you know, Aaron also wasn't punished by an earthly court. He was punished by a heavenly court. So, you know, in Halacha, I think it does, not in terms of being, you know, taken to Beit Din for it, but in terms of, a moral halachic imperative, I think that it is, it is relevant. I'll finish off just by saying the Rav Hirsch that we've got here, you know, outside as it's getting late. Rav Hirsch makes the observation, brings the Gemara in Masechet Tanit, that tells us that, we've got Moshe, Aaron and Miriam. And as we see from this week's parasha, that the Ananei HaKavod, certainly from the Chazals, the Ananei HaKavod, clouds of glory, were associated with Aaron. The Be'er, the water, was associated with Miriam. And the Man was associated with Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says, what's the link with each of them? And he says that the Navi, that speaks about the Shloshet Haroim, the three shepherds of the Jewish people, and also says, what's the role of a Jew? Asot mishpat v'havat chesed, v'atznei alechetim elokecha. To do what's right, to love kindness, and to walk modestly with Hashem your God. And he says, Moshe Rabbeinu was characterized by doing what was right. That's Aaron HaKohen was characterized by loving kindness. And Miriam, he says, and this is a little bit possibly kvetched, but I'm not sure what basis he's got for this, as Miriam represents Sniut. As a prophetess, a Jewish female leader, she must have had the quality of Sniut. He says, how does that link in with the Ananei HaKavod, the Be'er, and the Man? So the Man is what the people needed to sustain them. The Man was critical for people to be able to survive. So that was the Moshe Rabbeinu doing what's right. Aaron HaKohen was the Ananei HaKavod. That's providing shade. Shade isn't critical. You can make your own shade. You can put something out to shade you from the sun. But this was an act of chesed from Hashem. And the Be'er, water in a well, is hidden. And that represents Miriam, who characterized Tzniut. So you can ask Kashas on that, but it's a nice way of linking the three gifts, the man, the Be'er, and the Anan HaKavod, specifically to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Okay, let's finish here, otherwise there's no point in the early start.